Safah on the line with us, who is project coordinator from the IBDA Community Center. Safah, maybe you could tell us about the IBDA Community Center and tell us where it's located in the Dehesha refugee camp.
Thank you for inviting me over to this program. Let me talk a little about Dehesha refugee camp, and then I'll give you an overview of what we do here in IBDA Cultural Center. Dehesha refugee camp is located in Bethlehem, and it's one of three refugee camps in the area. Bethlehem, for those who are not very familiar with geography in Palestine, is about 10 minutes away from Jerusalem to the south. And the Dehesha refugee camp is the largest of the three in the area. We are about 10,000 people population-wise on only half a kilometer, square kilometer. And it's, you can imagine it's extremely dense. The refugee camp was established in 1949 after the Nakba, or after the 47 war, and people coming from mostly Jerusalem and Hebron area from 49 destroyed villages from the war, and they all came here in hopes that they would be able to come back to their original villages, and they're still waiting. Currently, this is the third generation of refugees denied the rights over the right of return to their villages. That cultural center is about 8 years old right now. They were established in 1994 as part of a cultural exchange between children in Dehesha refugee camp and children in France. And they started a dance troupe, dancing debka, which is the traditional Palestinian dance. And so they went to France, and they were so encouraged and so well-received that they decided to continue projects working with children, working with women within the community. And we've been 8 years in it, and I'm glad to say that we're going strong. We have currently about 14 different projects serving the community. One of the largest is a kindergarten and a nursery that's serving about 140 kids at the moment. We just started school last week, and we are extremely overcrowded. There are so many kids in the camp. Out of the 10,000 residents of the Dehesha refugee camp, 6,000 or more are children. So you can imagine what kind of life they have to live under such circumstances right now, especially with this intifada. I know Nidat spoke a lot about the right of return and checkpoints and what it means to be under occupation. But unfortunately, what happens is that after the violence, after they stop shooting, after they stop bombing in the refugee camp, then the news stops, and then people are left with the remainder of their lives here, and they can't function. Nobody cares about them anymore. And it's cultural centers like here, like in IBDA, that try to bring some sense of normality to their lives, and it's extremely difficult because nobody cares, and it's unusual to be invited to such programs like this and talk about what the situation is even after they withdrew, or so-called withdrawal of Israeli occupation forces.
You were talking about the repression and the brutalities committed by the Israeli Defense Force. Actually, if you can precise a little bit more, because it is quite astounding that a women and children's center has been ransacked and yes, attacked, being, you know, mainly yes, civilians.
The Israeli occupation forces targeted Dehesha much more than they actually targeted Bethlehem City, because Dehesha refugee camp is known for a strong resistance and resilience as a community. So it was really, really hard hit, especially since March, with the latest invasion. What happens is that when they enter the camp, they don't really care or differentiate between a community center or a hospital or a clinic or somebody's house. So truly, this refugee camp was the only camp where they actually went door to door looking for so-called wanted militants. And so the first time was in March. Of course, there was a curfew, so we don't know exactly which day they came in, but they went into the center, they ransacked the place. And it's obvious when you see pictures of it or when you come visit, that it's not necessarily that they were looking for anyone, but it's just going and destroying whatever they can. So we have, like, a glass case presenting all the women's embroidery because it's one of our projects. And when we walked in, the whole thing was broken. Things were stolen from it. So our papers, our filing system, everything was ransacked, our computers. So if they were truly looking for people, then what's the purpose of actually entering a community center and breaking everything in it? And this actually happened again in April, where they completely ransacked the place again after we tried to return it to some kind of normal state. So a lot of our documentation, a lot of our paperwork, a lot of the stuff that we've been doing and working on here in the different projects, we had to recreate because these people keep coming in and destroying everything. And this is part of the challenge of working in a refugee camp under occupation, that you're constantly redoing and reworking on things because you're always going to have an occupation now where they're withdrawn, but like all day today, the helicopters were flying in the air and the blimps, and this usually indicates that there's going to be another invasion. So don't be surprised if you hear anything on the phone. So it's this mindset that you're always prepared for the worst and you always have to recreate everything. You recreate your work, and it's very challenging for the community to constantly be living through that, especially for the children and the women, and especially now with the invasions and the high unemployment. Like, if we say the West Bank and Gaza in general, there's about 40 to 50% unemployment. In the refugee camps, it will be much higher. It will be like 60 to 70%. That not only affects the men, but it affects the women and the children directly. So it's not, when we talk about, like, violence and the effects of the occupation, it's not necessarily just shooting people, which, even though it's the case, I would like to mention that. Within this first intifada, 18 martyrs came out of Dehesha alone. We had to open a new cemetery to hold all the new bodies. In one day, there were four bodies, and there wasn't even room in the hospital for them. So we had to urgently find a new land and open it up as a cemetery, even though the place now is not supposed to be a cemetery. So, but besides that classical understanding of what is violence, even the unemployment, the poverty, the malnutrition, not being able to get food into the camp, all these things, those are violence also. And this is a misconception to constantly talking about shooting and bombing as the only form of violence. There are so many other forms that are much, much more subtle and much more detrimental for a community.
So basically, like Madre says and other human rights organizations, looking for militants is basically an excuse because most victims are civilians. And like in your center, the IFDA center, it's women and children. Yes, Nada?
Yeah, well, this will give you an idea. This is a very important what we have heard. This will give you an idea of the atmosphere in 1948 also. Mm-hmm. The Palestinians were also put under this kind of pressure, these kind of massacres, so that they will have to flee their land. My father is one of the people who decided to stay. But then, you know, with the gun on his head, they told him to leave his land. And this is the whole issue. The whole issue is we don't want any Palestinians on this land. And this is, now we are repeating what has happened in 1948. We put the Palestinians under so much pressure, so much atrocities, that they either have to leave or we will expulse them, we will evict them again outside of their territories.
Mm-hmm. Sefdar, can you please tell us about the children? Not only, have we read in through Madre that many children have been very critically injured and, you know, victimized by these incursions, but just growing in a state of siege, growing in a place where just going out of your house is a crime and you can be shot.
Absolutely.
That, you know, if you can please give us some information about the children, because there's reports that more than half of the children are suffering from malnutrition and that there's lots of illnesses, an epidemic of hepatitis in Nablus, and things like that. So if you can please talk about what it is for a Palestinian child to grow up in the Haiti today.
But if we can start with the health situation, there's only one clinic here in the Dehesha refugee camp, and it's an UNRWA clinic. UNRWA is the United Nations branch that's responsible for taking care of the Palestinian refugees. What happens is that they only have one part-time doctor taking care of 10,000 residents of this community. Can you imagine one part-time doctor just taking care of 10,000 people? Nowhere else in the world would this happen, but it's acceptable to happen here. So from that, you can extrapolate what kind of health situation men, women, and specifically children have to go through. It's considerably difficult to get medication, even if you can get to a doctor who can diagnose you with what's wrong. A lot of the times, they can't even leave because of the curfews. I mean, in the past, since March, there have been curfews constantly. You can't even leave your house. You can't look outside your window. You could be shot if a soldier sees you. So that kind of thing, as an adult, it's very hard to deal with. Like, you can't go out to work. You can't go out to buy food, anything. But can you imagine what it means to have a child? Can you imagine a two-year-old child staying in one room for over a month? I mean, it's impossible to get any child to sit down for an extended period of time. But under this situation, they're forced to, one, grow up considerably fast. And if you come here and you talk to one of the children in the street anywhere here in Dehesha refugee camp, they're not kids anymore. They're adults. They talk to you as an adult. They can talk politics with you. They, in a way, it's amusing for a foreigner, maybe, if they come and they talk to these kids and they're like, wow, they're so mature. But then the reasons for this maturity is forced upon them. So one, it's the physical aspect, the health, they can't get any medication, they can't get any care. The other thing is education is out the window completely because of these curfews. They can't go to school, they can't continue their education, there's no outlet for them. And then three, they lose their childhood. There's nowhere to play. There isn't a single playground in all of the Haiti refugee camps, not a single one. What they have to do is they play in the streets, they play in the alleys. Like even during curfew, it came to a point where they would break the curfew to go outside and play soccer. And one of the kids was shot as he was playing soccer in the street. How traumatizing is that for a child to grow up and know that you can be shot for playing soccer, for the simplest things that we take for granted in North America specifically? It's mind-boggling to me how they can live out normally and not suffer unbelievable setbacks in their mental health. It's fascinating to me. But all these things, they're layered, and we will see another generation of Palestinians that are considerably more aggressive. If the Israelis think by putting curfew, by imposing all the suffering on the Palestinian people, that they think that they're going to kneel down, what's happening is the complete opposite. What's happening is that they're bringing up a new generation of Palestinians that have more resistance, are used to having tanks go out on the street, are used to being shot at. So you're creating, the Israeli army has created a new Palestinian community that is more resistant that even than the generation of 48 or 67. So it's defeating whatever purpose they think they're trying to achieve.
You are listening to Safa, project coordinator from the IBDA Community Center, speaking with us from the Dehesha refugee camp near Bethlehem. Safa, you have talked a little bit about the economic crisis, but maybe you can speak as to the current situation of the IBDA Community Center.
Well, currently we're facing somewhat of a crisis right now. As I said, we started school last week, and we run a nursery and kindergarten, just to give you an example of like the stuff that we have to face with. We are the only kindergarten in all of the Dehesha refugee camp that don't take money up front. So all the kids in the refugee camp are coming to sign up in our nursery and kindergarten. The capacity of our kindergarten is about 80 to 100 students maximum. We already have 140 students registered with us, and we don't know where to put them. There's nowhere to put them. There's in any refugee camp, We have a problem of space. There is no space to put these children in. We can't turn them away because there is no other way, no other place that they can go or it can afford to go, which is even more tragic at the moment. These kind of projects at the moment, when we talk about like our difficulties in fundraising, for example, for the community center, people is like, no, we want to send food and medication and, you know, like a direct humanitarian aid. But people don't realize that stuff like a kindergarten is a humanitarian aid. It's something that is badly needed. These kids are growing up without anything, without any resources, without any hope or given tools to be able to resist. So it's a very, very dangerous and critical situation right now, is what do we do with this new generation that's growing up right now? And as a community center for children, we're facing that difficulty also, because people rather focus on the immediate gratification of, okay, I'm going to spend this money so then people can eat. Yes, that's very important, but also we have to think long-term about how to invest in the people themselves rather than handing them down stuff, and which is not healthy as a community to keep receiving food of that sort. As the community center, we don't want to do things like that. We want something that empowers the people, empowers the community, and it enables them to progress. So this is what IBDA is trying to do, is to give those tools to the people rather than a handout like what the United Nations tries to do, which is completely devastating to the community. And these are the challenges that we face with these children. What do we do with them? Where do we put them? How is the best way to alleviate the pressures that they've gone through? We've gone through 6 months of curfews, constant curfews. We're not talking about, you know, you can walk around during the day and then you have to go back at night. We're talking about 24-hour curfews. We're talking about if you go out on the street, they can randomly shoot you. All these things it affects the children's psyche in a way that we won't even know until they're all grown up, and how those effects will have on them. So when people demand negotiations and peace and all that, this is where it begins, community centers like this. Giving them tools, giving them, empowering them to do something, rather than looking for instant results, which are not going to happen.
Thank you so much, Safaa, for joining us today, live from the IBDA Community Center and Dehesha Refugee Camp. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
وروا بينا نزرع زرنا بأيدينا حتى نرد المرض.